Coming up on Golf Today, Jordan Spieth on the leaderboard at Sony and on the road in 2023. Wait till you hear how the three-time major champ is traveling this year with his young family in tow. And highlights of the Hero Cup, a lot of big names in this Ryder Cup warm-up for Team Europe. We'll find out who is playing well so far. And one of the game's great players and characters, Chichi Rodriguez, joins us from Puerto Rico. Confucius said, never give a sword to a man who can't dance, but Chichi has all the right moves on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
The PGA Tour continues its two-week Aloha swing this week at the Sony Open in Hawaii. Live second-round coverage coming your way later today, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. This is Golf Today. Happy Friday. Dave Manack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. We got Chichi on a Friday, one of the great characters. You know, when I kind of came to golf watching in the 90s, he was battling with the likes of Jack Nicklaus on PGA Tour Champions.
One of my fondest memories was flying to Puerto Rico probably 16, 18 years ago, driving almost through the night, almost totally in my car, trying to get off the exit
really?
The highway in southern Puerto Rico to Legado Golf Club, where he was living at the time. I assume he still is. Mm. But he was a really entertaining interview, I got
to
say.
Looking forward to that conversation from the island of Puerto Rico to the island of Oahu. Let's flash back to last year. Hideki Matsuyama fired that 31 on the back nine to force a playoff with Russell Henley. And then the first extra hole. How about this three-wood aiming from 276? I mean, this is quality.
Yeah, this is like pitching wedge. Lands like the old butterfly with sore feet.
Oh, love it. Third win in 17 PGA Tour starts. Has not won since, been dealing with a nagging neck injury. He is playing through it. Now, some highlights, some notables earlier today, including the aforementioned defending champ. Started off on the back. This is the par 3 11th, his tee shot.
From 198 yards. This one lands pretty much like that 3-wood last year, Damon.
Mm. It's stiff. Make birdie, get to 3. Under par.
Adam Scott, he started off on the back. Here he is on the par 4 12.
Yeah, the 2013 Masters champ is talking big. He's not done yet. He's got himself in shape and he's called himself extremely focused.
And he's pretty focused on that. It's at the 9 feet, made that birdie. He got the 3 under.
Or how about a two-time PGA Tour winner, JT Poston, the postman, par 3 4th, his tee shot.
If he can deliver from 174.
Nice shot.
That was an easy 6 under.
Got to take advantage. You know, the flag pretty limp at this point. How about David Lipsky? He's a two-time winner on the DP World Tour.
Rolling this one in from 18 feet. That got him to 7 under.
Oh, it's a track meet on this Friday. This is the 13th hole. Hideki. Little buddy went for par.
And that's a painful one.
You can almost tell, like, why are we showing an itty-bitty putt for par? He had a bad feeling about it. He dropped a 2 under. How about the highest-ranked player in this field, Tom Kim, for birdie at 15?
Trying to make some headway after a bad day yesterday. Rolls that one in, gets to 1 over.
Oh, celebration. The young man. How about Adam Scott once again? This from distance.
38 feet, to be exact. That's a pretty nice way to make it to 3 under.
Good to see him playing well. Have to make birdies, keep up with the lead. This is Tom Kim now on the par 5, 18th. Only 2 par 5s on this golf course.
If he can recreate the Hideki shot, this from 259. Not quite Hideki, but not bad.
Not bad at all.
Game brings everyone to its knees
at
the end, Damon.
It's a tough game, but I tell you what, wow, right now, scores are pretty good. Denny McCarthy, the UVA alum, won the Corn Ferry Tour Championship by 4 over Lucas Glover back in 2018, tied with David Lipsky, as mentioned before. LA native with a couple wins on his DP World Tour CV. Todd Lewis joins us now from the Sony Open. T. Lou, what stood out to you from the morning wave?
Well, first we're going to talk about the weather conditions. Not much wind out here on the island of Oahu, so players can really kind of fire at their targets and not worry about the wind. There is still a dry golf course. It is fast and firm, so they will have to worry about rollout in the fairways and on the greens. You talked about Denny McCarthy. This is his sixth year on the PGA Tour, and if you look at last season, it was a big year for his maturity on tour. Five top tens, including a top 10 at the U.S. Open. I asked him this week how much he is prioritizing winning on the PGA Tour. And he said that's what's driving him right now. It's something that he's really focused on. He also said that it's been hard. It's been frustrating at times because he knows he's put the work in, but he just hasn't been there in that key moment like a great putt needed on the 18th hole to win a tournament. That's something that he's hoping to improve. He's put in a lot of work in the gym. He is stronger. He is fitter. He is one of the better putters out here on the PGA Tour. And if you go back in recent history, strong putters usually perform well here at Wailea Country Club. The key for him now, as you heard me say, he really wants it, is still wanting it, but not wanting it too much that you get in your own way. So that's where Denny McCarthy is. It seems like he is right on the verge from crossing the threshold and winning on the PGA Tour. And heck, it might happen this week.
Looking for his first win this week on the island of Oahu. Much more from Todd in just a little bit. Folks, if you missed Jordan Spieth's handiwork yesterday, well, we have it. Some round one highlights. Spieth started off on the back. This is the par 4, 10th, his second, Eamon.
And this was a theme we saw all day long, Damon. Tipping it in there to within makeable birdie range.
Yeah, so good to see Jordan Spieth in the mix. This is the par 4, 12. A lot of wedges in your hands at Wailea.
This one from just 83 yards to 10 feet. Another birdie got him the two under.
Yes, indeed. Strolling down those emerald fairways. Now, this is the par 3, 17th. This is his second from just off the green. A little short game magic.
There is a huge ledge you can't really see between him and the hole there, so he opted for the flop shot. Still not on the green after two shots on the par 3.
Yeah, magic trick failed, but the fight is not over yet. This now for Paul.
Speed? He's gonna speed, Jamie.
I mean, I'd three putt from there because I'd be so mad about the second, but that's why Jordan
wouldn't have had the nerve to take on that second.
He got that out to putt it from there. Here's Spieth now from behind some trees at the par 4 first.
Nestles that one inside of 10 feet.
Yeah, he's just never out of a hole. Extremely resourceful, great imagination. Now this is Spieth now on the third hole from the middle of the fairway. It's got to be a go zone here.
From 133 yards, it certainly is. And this is the familiar theme of the day. Hits that to 8 feet. Went on, made the putt. That got him the four under, and he moved on to the par 4 fifth hole.
Yeah, another opportunity with a short club in his hands.
A short shot, 106.
Asked it to sit. He talks to the golf ball. The folks at home know Jordan Spieth verbally, not shy to speak his mind.
Sometimes it listens. Here he is on the par 3 7th from 27 feet for birdie.
Oh, they're a better mid-range putter in the game today. So he finished at 6 under. That's one off his lowest opening round ever on the PGA Tour. He's shot 63 in the first round, four times winning the 2017 Travelers. Opening round 64s have led to one victory, and it was a good one, the 2015 Masters. So let's go back to Oahu, and T. Lou joins us once again. So what's the latest with the three-time major champ? I understand it's going to be an interesting year of traveling for him.
Yeah, it will be, and it actually has been at the latter part of last year. You see, Jordan Spieth and his wife Annie decided to purchase an RV. It's more of a bus than an RV. He's already used it once. He doesn't have it, obviously, here on the island of Oahu, but it's something that he is looking forward to using as he makes his travels on the PGA Tour.
We tried one in Harding Park, PGA, so we tested it out there. Annie wanted one for a while, and I didn't really want one prior to Sammy, like, knowing he'd sleep through the night and schedule and all that, because it's close quarters compared to renting a house, but so she's wanted one for a while, and then it was just a matter of if the perfect one came at the right time, and then it did this last fall. Just glamping, you know, slumming it. It'll be, should be a lot of fun. I mean, the reason was kind of to have home on the road, We've got the same mattress I have at home, and we'll leave a lot of Sammy's stuff on the bus, and therefore we won't have to pack a whole lot and can ride on it in between a lot of events, given the way the tour, or the West Coast swing and the floor, especially the Florida swing. So should make traveling and getting settled and packing up quite a bit easier. And yeah, look forward to it. I mean, I've already stayed in it once. I haven't driven it. I plan on driving it on open road stretch at some point when it's not pulling out of Phoenix and not into LA, but maybe switch and just do like an hour of it just because it'd be fun. I'll be, you know, I'm a dad now. I'll do the whole, you know, someone wants me to honk, I'll honk.
You know, it's interesting when you travel out here on the PGA Tour, most of the players will rent houses if you have your family. And, you know, it's not your home. It's somebody else's home. So the reason that Jordan and his wife, Annie, decided to buy this RV or bus is the fact that that's theirs. That's their home, and they can have their young son, Sammy, with him. But it was interesting hearing Jordan saying that he plans to drive it some, not all the time. Can you just imagine if you're driving on the interstate and you look up and you see driving this big bus is Jordan Spieth? He's probably listening to Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed. And you give him that and you go, I mean, how cool would that be? A major champion giving you the horn. But it's a great investment for his family. It is something, obviously, that has him in a positive state of mind.
Teely, with all the goods, I tell you what, those things are gas guzzlers. I wish the Spieth family the best of luck on the road this year.
But I think he can afford it.
Gas is expensive. I think you're right. I think a good week this week, and I think he's going to be okay.
I think he's okay.
All right. Great stuff from Teely. By the way, Johnson Wagner, who won the Sony, is going to join us a little bit later. He used to travel, apparently, with an RV. What do you think about this? I put a bumper sticker, like maybe, you know, honk if the parts are falling off. Those things, you know, they're a little bit finicky from time to time.
He's not even driving it. He hired a driver RV. You might as well have an RV Uber. That's essentially what he's doing around. I'm just curious if there's a guest suite for JT on the bus as well.
Gotta be. And maybe Tom Kim, too, who was there
for
Christmas
dinner. Over for dinner every night now.
No doubt. Let's make this our social question of the day. The Spieth family hitting the road in the RV. What should Jordan's bumper sticker be? You know, I'm a dad now. Someone wants me to honk, I'll honk. The best answers will make this very show.
Welcome back to Golf Today. An important legal hearing is underway today in California's Northern District. Saudi Arabia's public investment fund and its governor, Yasser Al-Rumian, are trying to avoid being subject to the discovery process as part of the PGA Tour's defense against LIV Golf's antitrust suit. LIV is, of course, bankrolled by the Saudi investment fund, and the PGA Tour says the details of that relationship are crucial to the case. It's a ruling that could have pretty significant implications. And here's a timeline of how this legal action has played out. August 3rd, 11 LIV golfers filed the antitrust suit against the tour. We had that detour for the players trying to compete in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Soon after that, LIV joined the antitrust suit August 26th. The PGA Tour countersued a month later, and just a couple of days ago, a judge denied a request from the Saudis to delay the hearing on this discovery process. And yesterday, Golf Channel's legal analyst, Professor Jody Balsam from Brooklyn Law School, joined us to explain exactly what's at stake.
So tomorrow's hearing is going to address the PGA Tour's request for discovery from a non-party, the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which is the financial backer of LIV Golf. The PGA Tour wants this information from the Saudis because it believes that their involvement in LIV Golf's launch and in recruiting the golfers who defected from the PGA Tour is crucial to their antitrust defense and to their pursuit of tortious interference of contract charges against LIV Golf. The Saudis have refused to comply with any discovery requests or to deliver Mr. Al-Rumian for a deposition.
I'm curious what you think the Saudi resistance is to this one, Jody. I mean, they've made this argument for international comedy in the sense that Saudi government officials ought not to be subject to United States laws. Is that a viable argument here, or is there more at stake for the Saudis in this particular hearing that it might seem?
Well, they've made a few legal arguments. The principal one is the one you've described. Under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, to respect international relations, we do not compel foreign governments to jurisdiction of our courts. However, there is an exception in that act, and as a matter of international law, where a foreign government has proactively pursued commercial activity in another nation, and that commercial activity results in litigation, they must subject themselves to the jurisdiction of that court. That's what the Saudi Fund has done here. In backing and directing the activities of LIV Golf, they have engaged in commercial activity in the United States that should remove any immunity from our jurisdiction. They also make the arguments that the discovery requested in this case is unduly burdensome, that as a non-party, they should be entitled to a narrower, less burdensome mode of discovery. And they also finally claim in the alternative that they don't actually have any relevant documents or information to produce, a claim that frankly is less than credible.
So Damon, this hearing is ongoing today out in the Northern District in California. And based on what Professor Balsam was just saying, there are some pretty high stakes.
There really are. And I think we're learning whether or not the Saudis want to have their information secrets, you know, kind of subject to American litigation. And they're trying to kind of claim this foreign protectorship. I'm fascinated to see ultimately what the judge is going to decide and just kind of how deep the Saudis want to take this fight.
And that's going to be an interesting argument here, because if you remember when John Gruden was fired over those emails a couple of years ago, those emails came out as part of a discovery process in a suit involving Dan Snyder of the Washington Commanders. So when you start pulling threads in a discovery process, it can lead you into a lot of different areas. And the as Jody has pointed out in yesterday's show, there are known and stealth investments that the Saudi Public Investment Fund has been involved in that might be unearthed as part of a discovery process, because the discovery process here in American litigation is very permissive.
Right.
And they don't want that kind of scrutiny. So if they are compelled, even with guardrails or guidelines, if they are compelled to undertake this discovery process, it's going to have a pretty fearsome impact on them. I mean, the governor of the fund, Yasser Al-Rumian, even actually filed a document saying that his own employer, MBS, could potentially sentence him to 20 years in jail for giving up confidential information. Well, I would file that under Crimea River. I mean, this is clearly an organization in the Saudi government that doesn't think rules apply to it. We've seen they don't think rules and processes apply even on something as insignificant as the official world golf ranking, but they don't think rules apply when it comes to American antitrust law, nor, I suppose, human rights either.
Would this be the turning point that you think would compel the Saudis to say, enough, we want no part of any litigation that exposes any of our secrets or how we go about our foreign business?
I think what comes out of this hearing, and we don't know if we get a ruling today or if that ruling comes next week, but certainly the judge in charge of the entire antitrust litigation who has delegated this decision today has shown an impatience for delays and has set an aggressive timetable. It depends what guardrails or parameters are set on any discovery process. But given the resistance that the Saudi Public Investment Fund has shown on this particular issue and this fearfulness of being subject to discovery, even claiming sovereign immunity from American laws while having filed a lawsuit themselves in an American court, it would lead you to believe that they have a certain desperation to not go down that road.
Yeah.
If the decision goes against the Public Investment Fund, it would count as a fairly stressful day for people in the LIV world, because it might cause some doubt as to what the long-term plan is here. How deep do they want to go down this road?
Potentially a big day for the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. And I understand more news coming from the official World Golf Ranking as well.
There is. The World Golf Ranking announced today that there is what they're calling the International Federation PGA Tour's ranking lists. And we've heard a lot of criticism, Damon, about the fact that smaller tours and players who excel on those tours might be shut out or not noticed or rise as high in the current world rankings. This is a list that comes from the Asian Tour, Japan Golf Tour, PGA Tour, Australasia, and the Sunshine Tour, and it essentially is designed to order the list of players who are excelling on those tours and who might not otherwise be getting noticed. And this is intended for tournament directors and the bigger tours, primarily the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, to alert them. These are the guys on the smaller tour who are making noise, who are excelling on that list, and they ought to be given opportunities, because it is harder and harder to play your way out of those tours in the official world golf ranking.
In the new system. In the new system than it would have been previously.
It is. The pathway is a little tougher because you are judged and you rise based on the quality of the people you're playing against.
Right.
And those guys aren't showing up on the Japan Tour very often. But you could also make a valid argument that it is not the job of the official world golf ranking to create pathways. That is a job for the tours itself. And what the official World Golf Ranking has done here is offer those tours a tool by saying, here are the guys who are excelling and playing at the highest level on these tours that possibly deserve that opportunity to compete in more high-profile events.
This process started in August of 2021, so it's no direct link to LIV Golf, but is there anything that could be applied to LIV Golf as we take a look at these ranking lists with this International Federation, which includes Cameron Smith, a PGA Tour of Australasia, who's number 3 in the world.
He is, and he's sort of number 5 on this list by virtue of his recent victory in Australia. But a tournament director on the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour is very unlikely to turn around and say,
oh, who's this Cameron Smith guy? Yeah. Oh, yeah, wait a minute, yeah.
But you see Kazuki Higa on number 1 on that list. He was, of course, a couple of weeks ago given an invitation to compete in the Masters this year based on having won 4 times on the Japan Tour last year. So it's kind of agnostic in terms of who these people are or what their current status is, whether they're LIV or non-LIV. It's simply ranking people who are playing well on particular tours. We may actually see more LIV people show up on that over the course of the next year or two if they compete more on the Asian Tour, into which LIV has poured a couple of $100 million.
Maybe give these players some opportunities to get a sponsor's exemption, perhaps, a notice on one of the big tours as well.
Yeah, I mean, all they can ask in this meritocracy of golf is the opportunity to play. We saw Tom Kim. That's how he essentially made his way, and now he's rocketed up to 14 in the world by taking great advantage of the opportunities that were afforded him. This should make that process a little easier for other players to follow him, because they are essentially running up a flag saying, this guy is worth paying attention to.
Give some underdogs some opportunities. One of the great underdogs of all time, Chichi Rodriguez, joins us on the other side of the break from his native Puerto Rico, the site of the Latin America Amateur Championship. Golf in Puerto Rico. You may be wondering what's all about. 9 players representing Puerto Rico in this great championship. There are 22 golf courses in Puerto Rico, annually host the Puerto Rico Open on the PGA Tour. Fantastic place. I've been, wonderful spot, family, friends, Golf Puerto Rico territory, official golf federation in existence, by the way, since 1954. On its most famous golfer, got to be Chichi, born in 1935, won 8 times on the PGA Tour, inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1992, becoming the first golfer from Puerto Rico ever inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Also won 22 times on PGA Tour champions, a couple of senior majors as well, 4 top 10 finishes in majors, inducted in that World Golf Hall of Fame, as mentioned, in 1992, and his legacy is now being honored in a new exhibit at the USGA Golf Museum. The exhibit displays several signature threads, including a bag tag from the 1991 U.S. Senior Open, and the World Golf Hall of Famer joins us now from Puerto Rico. Chichi, 9 players from Puerto Rico are in this field. What's it been like for you to experience this celebration of golf and the amateur game where you grew up?
Well, Damon, you know, I've been watching, and the future of golf is terrific. These young guys are so good. I mean, we have to give them credit. And, you know, I hope that the Puerto Rican golfers pick a good role models like Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus and the great Bobby Jones, who was the greatest amateur of all time. I think that they are going to be great golfers, too.
Chichi, Puerto Rico has produced incredible athletes, boxers, and baseball players. Did you choose golf, or did golf choose you?
Yeah, well, you know, Roberto Clemente was the top 10 best baseball players of all time. He won 5 most valuable players. They took one away from him and gave it to Dick Grove in 1961. And he was the most valuable player, but Posh Rodriguez, you know, there's never been a greater catcher than him. And we had great boxing champions like Miguel Cotto and Esteban de Jesus. I mean, we had a lot of good athletes, but we have never created one Puerto Rican like me, you know. But I hope in the near future, one or two of them would rush to it and do it. And remember something. The great Gary player said, when you win, you win humble, and when you lose gracefully.
Well, you won plenty of times, Chichi. You set a pretty high bar for the golfers who come after you with 8 wins on the PGA Tour, starting the Denver Open, 1963. You won 22 times on the PGA Tour Champions. You had a 30-year win stretch there. When you look back at all those victories, is there one that still means more to you than any of the others?
Well, you know, I was happy. My goal in golf was to have people like me. You know, I sacrificed maybe a lot of victories because I didn't concentrate like I should, but I could care less. I had the victory of the people. Look at their smiles when you show them on television watching me. And Jack Nicklaus, what a great man he was. And Gary Player and Sam Snead and Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson, Tiger Woods, all these great guys. I love them. And I see these amateurs on TV, and I know they're going to rise to take over in golf, and I'm very, very happy with that.
You are certainly known as one of the great showmen in this golf game, Chichi. Do you see much of that anymore in golf? Do you think the players who are on the top of the world right now should perhaps entertain a little bit more in the way that you did back in the day?
Well, you know, they all look the same. I don't know. You know, when we play the tour, if you look down the fairway, you say, there's Ben Hogan. And then there's Sam Snead. There's Jimmy DeMarre, there's Doug Sanders, there's Gary Player. We were all different. And of course, I did this sort, and they say, but you know, when I first started, they called me the hot dog pro because the people used to watch and say, who's coming up? And they say, Arnold Palmer and Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus. And everybody watched. Then they ask, who's coming after them? And they say, that guy, Chichi Rodriguez, and a couple other guys, and they say, well, let's go get a hot dog.
Chichi, one of my favorite photos, this picture of you and caddy Johnny Lynch at the 1975 Masters, a kaleidoscope of colors. Johnny's in green and white. You have red pants and the coolest fedora I've ever seen. Where did you get your style from?
Well, you know, my wife, Eva Lani, who is not with me anymore, God needed her and took her. She used to kind of dress me, you know, and she always had the right color. She was Hawaiian, and she was a wonderful woman. And sometimes I put some clothes out and she said, that's not what you're going to wear. This is what you're going to wear. And I wore what she said. She always made good combinations. I still dress like that.
Still got the style, Chichi. At 87 years old, you've accomplished a tremendous amount in this game. What do you think is your greatest legacy? Is it the playing record? Is it the entertainment you provided? Is it spreading the game to other kids who came after you? What do you think is the most important part of the Chichi Rodriguez legacy?
The biggest thrill that I've had in my life was I met Mother Teresa, and I spent 45 minutes with her speaking one-on-one. And I never felt so great in my life as speaking with her. She's an angel now. They canonized her. And my legacy will be that someday when I die, the kids will come and I'm going to leave some flowers on my testament. And I'm going to leave the money for 2 flowers in my foundation in Clearwater and have the kids come over and look and pray and say, I want to be like Chichi. And Chichi, he was my pal. And that's all I want from kids.
Chichi, you've been a great pal to this game. Watching you play golf and watching you in the sword dance has been a joyful experience. Thanks so much for your time on this Friday. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Damon and Eamon, God bless you. God bless the Queen, And God bless you, all of you, and God bless the game of golf and the United States Golf Association that does such a great job with the game of golf.
And God bless Chichi Rodriguez, one of the greats to ever do it. Never a dull moment, especially after a birth. On golf today, second round leaderboard at the Sony. How about a little college bingo? Hayden Buckley, Mizzou product, Austin Eckrode, Oklahoma State. They're tied at -9. David Lipsky, Northwestern product, at -8. Taylor Montgomery, UNLV, strong start to his season. 3 top tens, including 3rd at the Ford Net. He's currently 12th in the FedEx Cup standings. Had 2 runner-up finishes on the 2022 Korn Ferry Tour schedule. How about this date in golf history? Let's go all the way back to 1933. Augusta National Golf Club formally opened. Now in April, it will host the 87th Masters Tournament. So why not an early peek, Eamon Lynch, at the Masters odds? I'm rubbing my hands together. I'm very excited to see what the numbers look like. I got to think Rory. I'm going to say Rory is going to be the top man. And there he is.
You are right.
The top
John
man.
John Rahm right behind him, although John Rahm probably thinks he ought to be the favorite as well. And could
why
make
not?
That case.
I mean, how about some early predictions then? I mean, all these players on this list can say they have a chance to get it done. Do you have a way too early Masters prediction?
Well, none of them would be a surprise. The only prediction we can make with any certainty here 3 months ahead of the Masters is that the noise around the game will overwhelm everything. At least until Thursday. We can hope that on Thursday the golf takes over, but this is going to be the first occasion in which we see live golfers and PGA Tour golfers compete against each other since last summer. And a lot has happened since the last major championship. There was no litigation going on the last time these guys all got together at the Open Championship at St. Andrews. A lot of water's gone under the bridge. A lot of relationships have been fractured. And we're going to see all of that and the noise play out around that for the first 3 days of that
Monday to Wednesdays. Going to blot out the sun, this story.
And we hope it ends there. But if one of those guys like a Cam Smith or a Brooks Koepka, someone like that, is suddenly in contention, potentially even pulling on that jacket on Sunday evening, well, then the danger that the political noise around the game overwhelms even the golf for some fans, that's a pretty high risk.
Part of that noise, part of the reason why I think Rory McIlroy will win the green jacket is because of the noise that you predicting for Monday through Wednesday. I think Rory McIlroy doesn't need a green jacket. I mean, he wants one. I think he knows who he is. He has found his voice as a leader in this moment. And I believe that with someone with, 7 top 10 finishes at the Masters, 11 top 25 finishes at the Masters, a runner-up finish 1 year ago, FedEx Cup number 3, talk to Brad Faxon, everything in working order for the 4-time major champ, who will now have his, 9th attempt to complete the career Grand Slam.
And that second-place finish this year, courtesy of that hold bunker shot on 18, that's often, or has been in the past, a harbinger of success the following year for a lot of guys. You can certainly say that he used it as fuel this year to make a point. It's also reasonable to suggest that there are some live golfers who might want to make an equally strenuous point by the time they get there. On Sunday, and you know, this idea of saying we're still relevant, we may not be front and center anymore.
What if that happened? If Cameron Smith puts on a green jacket, is that a small victory, a big victory, a push? What is that? I mean, I think that's a statement.
Well, it's a statement from Cameron Smith, but he's already made that statement. He's won in St. Andrews. He's clearly one of the best golfers in the world. He just simply made a decision that would suggest over the course of time, he's no longer going to be measuring himself against the best golfers in the world, in which case it becomes difficult or more difficult to attest to just how good Cameron Smith is at any given point in time. Because the likelihood is, in the near future anyway, that we're going to see Cameron Smith 4 times a year in the major championships. And that applies to a few of the golfers. We're going to see more live golfers at Augusta National because there are a half dozen ex-champions who are in the field. And Augusta National is never going to disinvite its former champions. That's just simply not going to happen. And given the antitrust lawsuit going on now, I don't expect any of the majors to change significantly any criteria that could lead them to be accused of conspiring against Liv in any way. So the majors are certainly going to be a bit of a cage fight this year, and that's not something Augusta National would, I think, take kindly to. It's a little vulgar and potentially overwhelming the general feel of the tournament and the excitement around the tournament. And I suppose all we can hope for is that the noise dies out by Wednesday night and the golf takes over.
Rory McIlroy has shown he has the stomach for the fight. 10 times a runner-up has come back the next year and put on the green jacket. So maybe it'll be Rory McIlroy's time in 2023. Scott Stallings just wanted to get the invite, you know? You gotta get the invite before you get the green jacket, Eamon. Here he is, finally the mailman got it right, huh?
Well, obviously he didn't send it overnight because this story's been playing out for a while, Damon, but it's nice to see the correct Scott Stallings has his package, and hopefully the guy who sent it to him, the other Scott Stallings, has his tickets for the practice round that he's getting.
Absolutely, be a lot of Stallings at Augusta in April. Speaking of invitations, we get closer to this year's Masters. Invitations to the Augusta National Women's Amateur have been sent out as well. Gianna Clemente with her invite. There's Stanford's own Mega Gane and Rose Zhang as well. Always a big week plus now. Couple weeks in Augusta. You can catch the Augusta National Women's Amateur live on NBC Saturday, April 1st, with coverage all week right here on Golf Channel.
Well, it's a long time to Augusta, Damon, but it's a long way to Hawaii as well. We're headed to the islands next. We're going to check in with Dan Hicks. He's on the call for the Sony Open at Wailea. Stay with us. Some people think the best hair in golf lives on Brandel Chamblee's head, but those people are wrong. It sits on the upper lip of this guy, Johnson Wagner. The Stash with the Flash will be in the studio to talk about his win at the Sony Open and what to expect this weekend. And the man calling that action in Hawaii will be here too. Dan Hicks takes a break from the booth to join us from the beach at Wailea. Golf Today rolls on.
Golf Today.
Getting closer to live second round coverage of the Sony Open in Hawaii later today on Golf Channel, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You got pregame at 6. Big day, big weekend. First full field event of 2023. Our little show's called Golf Today. Damon Hack and Eamon Lynch. We got Dan Hicks coming up in just a little bit. What do you want to ask the guy known as Danny?
Well, whatever I ask him, I know he's going to answer it, because the last time I saw Dan was in a restaurant in a hotel in Atlanta during the Tour Championship, and there was a parade of people approached Dan as he was eating dinner after work one night, and he entertained every one of them, he engaged every one of them, answered questions. He must have been exhausted by the time he got to bed.
Does one of the great Bill Clinton impersonations of all time. Does many, but his Clinton one is one of the best I've ever heard.
I'll have to catch that the next time I find him in a bar somewhere on the road.
No doubt. Hicksy coming up. Highlights coming your way now in case you missed it. Defending champ Hideki Matsuyama started off on the back. This is the par 3 11th.
This from 198. And this is going to help him get to 3 under par.
Yeah, I've been dealing with a bit of a neck injury, he said, since Bay Hill last year. Been playing through it, not always feeling his best, but that was a fantastic shot. Here's Adam Scott, 2013 Masters champ.
A man whose wardrobe has gotten more commentary over the last few months, perhaps, than his game. But this from 102 yards. 9 feet would make the birdie, got the 3 under.
The postman, JT Poston, par 3 for his tee shot.
Delivering yet again. It's this one to a few feet. Made that for birdie. 6 under.
2 wins for him, including last year at the John Deere. Here's David Lipsky, Northwestern product. Par 3, 4th for birdie from 18 feet.
Pushes him up the leaderboard to 7 under.
Guys are making a move on this Friday. Adam Scott, par 4, 15th. This from long distance.
It's almost downtown Honolulu here, Damon. 38 feet.
You gotta be careful sometimes downtown. I've been. Here's Tom Kim, par 5, 18th. His second. A lot of action on this hole. You can make a big number or you can take it deep.
And he looks kind of uncertain as to where this one's going from 259. smudges it onto the green.
The green interior. I mean, a character, you know. Chi-Chi talked about having characters. Tom Kim, one of the more lovable in the game. Mackenzie Hughes started off on the back par for second.
Well, that's a new role for a caddy there, making sure his guy stays dry while hitting a shot from the tips of his toes.
I mean, it's teamwork. That's why they say it's we. It's a wee thing.
Let's see if he can make the par putt from 15 feet.
Oh, how about it? Center cut, pork chop.
A caddy deserves an extra percentage or two by week's end, Damon.
No question about it. Matt Hughes getting it done. Hayden Buckley for the second round of 64 for the Mizzou product. Currently tied with Taylor Montgomery. Taylor having himself quite the rookie season. He's tied through 13 holes play with more from beautiful Wildlife. Let's welcome in our colleague Darren Hicks on the call this week. Darren, I'd say it's great to see you, first of all. I'd say after Tiger Woods, I'd probably tap Jordan Spieth as the most compelling figure in the game. As a broadcaster, what do you love most about having Jordo in the mix?
He's as entertaining as it gets these days, Damon. It's always a pleasure to have him in the mix, and as he continues to build himself back from the abyss that he's dug himself out of, everybody knows about how we've documented his return to the elite. So anytime he's on a leaderboard, people pay attention. You really can't take your eyes off of him, and he's talking about right now how he feels like he can go out pretty much every round and shoot 5 or 6 under. So for Jordan to say that, you know that all those rehearsals and all the swing moves that he goes through that we've been seeing for the past couple of years, I think he believes that they're about ready to pay off big time with another win, hopefully early in the year for him.
Dan, this is your second week in a row calling Jordan Spieth and others. I'm wondering what your verdict was on the first designated event we saw last week. It's pretty difficult to make what is already a small elite field feel more important. Did it feel more important to you on site? Was there a different vibe?
Yeah, I think last week, first of all, it was the best field that they've ever had, pretty much, at Kapalua. This week, it's a much different feel because you've got guys that are finally playing for the first time. It's the first full field event. But I think it's a nice, eclectic mix, and I think that's kind of been the tradition here at the Sony Open in Hawaii, the second week, to have a different kind of golf course, different kind of field, different kind of feel. I don't know about what you guys think, but what we saw last week with Jon Rahm chasing down Colin Morikawa, we've been doing this a long, long time. We were trying to put it in perspective, still are. I don't think we've seen anything like that. But that's just what's so great about this game, guys. You know it. You talk about it every day. And it's just, it's incredible. You don't know what's going to happen. We have another jam-packed leaderboard at this Sony Open, so it's one of those things where anything can happen. Anytime Jordan Spieth is in the mix, even with guys that people aren't really familiar with, it's good stuff.
There's certainly a couple of heavyweights you had fighting it out over the weekend last week, and there's plenty of them in the field this week as well. But as you mentioned, it's the first full field event, Dan. How different is that vibe this week? Are there a lot more game faces that you're seeing now, as though last week was maybe the vacation part of the Hawaiian swing for a lot of guys, but this is where the business starts?
Yeah, I think it's really important. Obviously, there's a lot of guys. I think 19 guys came over from Kapalua to play here at the Sony Open. But I think it's extremely important for those guys in the first full field event to get things going in 23 off to a great start. And a lot of them haven't played. And a lot of them are living in parts of the country where they haven't been able to kind of, you know, they have not had the weather to get their games in shape. There's a number of guys that are near the top of the leaderboard that are just still dusting off the club, so to speak. So it's a different feel. It's important for these guys that are just got their PGA Tour cards. Obviously, there was the fall season last year. But this is where golf kind of starts heading down the stretch to the first major of the year. And this is where we really start getting a feel of who's going to be in the mix coming down in the March Florida swing, which we're a big part of, and obviously into the first majors of the year.
Dan, a lot of people are wondering about Tiger Woods. You spent some time with Tiger at the Hero, where he could not play due to plantar fasciitis. What did you glean from that conversation in terms of his mood, his optimism, his outlook?
Well, we asked him pretty much straight out. We spent a lot of time with him. He came in the booth on Thursday, spent 45 minutes to an hour with us. He was back with us on NBC on Saturday at the Hero World Challenge. And finally, I asked him, I said, "You wouldn't probably be doing this if you didn't think you could win again." He goes, "Oh, yeah." He goes, "I think That's the Tiger thought process, right? He's not going to give this. He's not going to come out here and play if he doesn't think he's going to win eventually. So I believe he thinks he can win if he gets in the right tournament at the right moment. And when maybe the moment gets too big in a major championship, I asked Zinger, I said, do you think he's going to win again? And do you think he's going to win a major? Zinger thinks he's going to win. It's taking that next step to a major that's not a huge deal for Tiger because he's been there so many times that I think if he gets in the mix, I think it could be the latest, greatest chapter for Tiger. There's no doubt in my mind if he gets in the right tournament, feeling good enough to where he's able to, you know, negotiate that leg that he has that everybody knows it's been the big problem for him. He can still hit the shots, right? So that's going to be one of the more intriguing subjects. Once again, Tiger in 2023 at the age of 47. It's going to be really interesting to keep an eye on.
Speaking of majors, Dan, the USGA announced earlier this week that the 2028 U.S. Open is going to Winged Foot, your home course. It's a pretty quick turnaround by USGA standards from the 2020 Open to the 28 to go back to the same venue. You got to be looking forward to it, given that fans and the club itself was kind of deprived of the real vibe of a U.S. Open back in 2020 because of the change in the schedule and the pandemic with no crowds present.
No doubt about it, Eamon. I thought to myself, boy, if the Winged Foot membership can get one more U.S. Open that I may be able to be a part of, that's going to be great stuff. And I remember driving around in the golf cart, either going to the booth or just kind of getting a feel for what was happening in that 2020 U.S. Open. It almost felt like a member guest at Winged Foot, or there was maybe more electricity and atmosphere at just one of the club's regular events that they have than there was at the U.S. Open. I'll never forget when Bryson DeChambeau made an eagle at the ninth. There were two eagles there in the final group. It was just a smattering of applause by mostly volunteers, which came from the members of Winged Foot. So to have another U.S. Open there, the seventh one at Winged Foot, and to have it in full throat, I think is going to be something that not only the membership is looking forward to, but if NBC and I can be a part of it, it would be just be a huge privilege again.
Winged Foot, one of the toughest tests in all of golf, where I hit nothing but four irons from the right rough. Hey, Dan, thanks for the time. Have a great call today, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, he is Dan Hicks. You'll hear him coming up today and this weekend. It's only Friday, we know, but we're looking ahead to the Monday headlines. And Eamon, congratulations. I got to give you credit because you aced the first test with John Rahm, Kapalua, here to try to double up.
Yeah, I'm confident on this one again. My headline for Monday is Denny's cooking now with victory in Hawaii. Denny McCarthy, he's overdue here. Shot 65 in the first round, 5 under par. He shot a 68 today. So he's sitting there at 7 under par. And this is a guy, he hasn't played at all since the RSM Classic. We haven't seen much out of him since Memorial US Open time last summer. But he's closing in on 30 now, and I think it's really time for a Denny McCarthy to step up there. He's 81 in the world rankings, but what struck me in yesterday's round is he's known as being a putter of significant quality. He has led the PGA Tour twice in that category, and he was second last year, but he was second in the field yesterday in strokes gained off the tee. So you combine that with the hot putter that he seems to have almost every day, then I'm inclined to think that Denny McCarthy could really find his groove this week and get that first tour victory.
Nelly Korda raved about Denny McCarthy's putting stroke at the QBE. I'm going to go with the guy who's shown a propensity for greatness at kind of the cozy confines in golf, Colonial, Heritage. Jordan Spieth. You know, he does well at these kind of golf courses. I'm going to say Spieth wins, almost earns enough money for gas for this new RV. Because as I said earlier, these are gas guzzlers. And listen, more importantly, it'd be nice to have Jordan Spieth, you know, win again, win early in 2023. As Dan Hicks noted, there's just no one like Jordan Spieth. When you watch him, you live and die with every shot as he does. But I think that'd be a nice way to kind of christen this new RV with a victory early in 2023.
He's probably going to burn more gas on the G5 getting back from Hawaii in the first place. It would have been cheaper to probably drive
no doubt. An
RV that distance. He would be a great story to start the year. You'd be coming with two heavyweights in the first 2 weeks of the year with John Rahm and Jordan Spieth, both of whom do it in very different fashions. And we had this conversation yesterday. I think this is a course that tests exactly what are the intangibles that are Jordan Spieth's strengths.
He is an intangible.
Imagination.
Yes, he is an intangible. He's a living, breathing intangible.
Like that flop shot we saw on the par three yesterday from just off the green.
Yeah.
You know, most guys aren't going to take that shot on, but Jordan Spieth plays well on courses that demand imagination as much as execution. The troubling thing yesterday was he wasn't particularly good off the tee. He was very, very good with a putter. He was third in the field in putting. But is that sustainable over 4 days? Who knows? I mean, we talked to Brad Faxon yesterday about winning out here 20 years ago, and Brad said it was the best golf he'd ever played for 4 days in a row.
He's on the golf course in a few minutes, and of course, second round coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, and he's coming up. He's heading out to the range as he gets set for his 5:40 p.m. Eastern time. We will be back to talk a little Jordan Spieth right after this. Welcome back to Golf Today. Here is your leader of the Sony Open halfway through round two, Hayden Buckley, a man who was one off the 36-hole lead halfway through the US Open last year, finished T14. Seven birdies today in that 64 to finish at 9 under par. And after his round, he caught up with Todd Lewis.
Yeah, Hayden, you were 3 shots better today than yesterday. What did you elevate in your game today compared to the opening round?
I mean, I think the conditions were just a little bit better, made it a little bit easier. Because I hit the ball really well yesterday. I think I missed 2 greens, and I missed the first 2 greens today. So, you know, nothing really changed. I think the conditions just improved, and I had a few more chances, you know, with those conditions improving. I had a lot of great looks. I left it on the right side of the hole and had a lot of very straight putts, which is not very common. But, you know, I made a slight putter grip change late in the round yesterday. Just moved my hands around a little bit and felt better. Made a few putts at the end and putted well today. So,
is that something you've been working on, or is that just something you did on the fly?
No, you know, it was literally just a move and a finger, actually. It wasn't really, I switched to cross-handed at the U.S. Open last year and I've loved that, but just moving a finger or two around, really, just to feel more comfortable, I guess you could say. It's not something that I really want to do forever, but it's something short term that it felt great and it looked good. So I hope I can get out of that, but I'm going to keep doing it while I can.
It's been a while because of scheduling since you played on the PGA Tour. Did you anticipate you were going to play this well coming to Hawaii?
You know, last year I did the same thing. I took pretty much the whole month of December off. You know, this off season I got married, which was great. Enjoyed the honeymoon and got to relax. And you know, last year I kind of did the same thing where I really didn't do much in the off season. Where in years past I've worked really hard in the off season to get ready for, you know, Monday qualifiers or whatever I used to do. And I feel like my body just healed up. I mean, I've been battling a little small injury for a while, and my body feels strong, and that's all I really wanted. You know, I didn't touch a club until I think January 3rd or 4th was my first day practicing since Sea Island. So, you know, really a few days back in Florida and a few days here to prep, and I feel just like I did last year. So I attribute it to just rest, and I think I'm going to take that with me. I'm not playing next week. I'm going to kind of plan my schedule a little bit better and hopefully feel a little more rested.
Rest easy tonight. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jordan Spieth will be among those chasing Hayden Buckley. Jordan tees off in about 20 minutes from now. Jordan on Thursday talked about the importance of a hot start.
So I would say, like, I started really well in 2018, 19, and maybe a couple of events in 20, where it was a day like today where I shot, you know, 5 or 6 under to start. I think I remember doing it at Travelers one time and the PGA in 19. And I just remember thinking, you know where my game's at and I can maybe fake it as best as I can, but it's not. I don't really have great control. I used my hands really well for a couple days, conveniently the first two in a row. So then it's not like I didn't believe. It's more that I have a good idea of where things are at and if I have that shot or don't have that shot. And this is different. You know, the last couple of years have been a little different where off to a good start and I'm like, okay, I think I can improve a little to gain just a little bit more control, but I was in really good control. And for me, it's about freedom. It's not separating arms from the body and having to save shots. It's feeling like I'm in front of them and being able to hold them off and nice fluid strokes on the greens. And that's really all it comes down to. And it seems simple, but when you're still fighting the urge to want to hit it hard or fighting the urge to get over some bad habits, you know, days like today, I'm not surprised. But what I will say is I'm confident relative to other time periods I've been off to similar starts, which is a really good place to be. I believe that I can shoot 5 or 6 under each day out here. Not to say that that means it'll happen, but those other times I'd be sitting there going, how do I hold this together, to be honest? Seriously.
Jordan Spieth, 64 yesterday, gearing up for round 2, 5:40 p.m. Eastern time, 3-time major champ. Brain Amon always seems to be working overtime as he discusses how he goes about his process.
I feel as though I was just eavesdropping on a therapy session there, Damon, which is often what it feels like with Jordan Spieth. But, you know, he's going to be encouraged today as well. You know, he left here yesterday at, you know, 6 under par, was leading. He's going out today, and he's still only 3 back off the lead now. He's tied for 8th. There are 13 players now within 3 shots of the lead, but none of them have a resume that comes anywhere close to Jordan Spieth. So all eyes are going to be on him this afternoon. And, you know, the identikit picture of his round yesterday is interesting. He was top 15 in the field in strokes gained off the tee, but he was decidedly middle of the pack when it came to strokes gained approach, 55th. In the field, he wasn't in the top 50 in strokes gained around the green, but he was in well inside the top 10 in putting, and he needs to sustain that. And that's a significant improvement over where he was, even on the season, which is a very incomplete picture of his statistical putting this season, 104th. Last year, 155th through the course of the season. That's really noteworthy, given that that's a category where he ranked 2nd as recently as 2019.
Missed half of his first 10 fairways yesterday, and that seems to be kind of the continual battle. When Jordan Spieth plays from the fairway, he wins tournaments. When he misses fairways, he still often finds a way to contend, but you could hear him even kind of trying to talk himself into being almost where he wants to be. I almost feel like that's almost the way he goes about his business. There is a need to almost be uncomfortable, to always be searching, to never be satisfied. He says he's looking for complete freedom in his game, but you have to wonder if this is a player who's ever really felt complete freedom, even in the throes of winning major championships in 2015 and 2017. There was always a sense that the tape might unravel at any moment.
The only time I can recall him playing with absolute freedom, and Matt Kuchar will certainly remember, it was over those last 4 or 5 holes at Royal Birkdale back in 2017, where he went from being out on the driving range to suddenly just birdieing or eagling every hole all the way to the clubhouse. So he does find freedom. He's just particularly analytical and particularly verbal when it comes to that analysis. But, you know, maybe this RV life he's pursuing now suggests that he's in something of a different place. He's less in his own head, that it's perhaps easier to focus on something else, particularly his wife and child when he's away from the golf course, whereas at an earlier point in his life, there was going to be no escaping of those voices. So he does seem in a better place than he was for those 3 winless years.
It was not that long ago that Jordan Spieth would make a golf swing on the driving range and immediately would seek the phone behind him, held by either his coach Cameron McCormick or his caddy Michael Greller, to look at the swing. What am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? It's nice to just see Jordan on the driving range hitting golf shots and not just analyzing every single swing to the nth degree.
And what we're also seeing here on the range at Wailea is something that we're not seeing last year, is that exaggerated practice swing that he said his goal last year was to eventually get away from that. And that stuck with him for quite a ways through last year, where he had that particularly exaggerated takeaway before he actually swung. We're not seeing that now, so maybe that suggests he is a little closer to the freedom he wants.
And I do love the fact that even as he did that practice swing, he acknowledged that it wasn't the prettiest thing to look at, that it was a little bit awkward, but, you know, there are a lot of ways to get it done, and clearly he's finding more comfort in his swing maybe than he had a year ago when he was still trying to find his way back.
You can never take your eyes off him. And there's something else you can't take your eyes off, Damon. Coming up, Johnson Wagner won three times on the PGA Tour, but that famous mustache was only there for one of them. That was the Sony Open at Waialae in 2012. Johnson will join us for a past champions chat right after the break.
On Golf Today, let's flash back to 2012. Sony Open in Hawaii. Johnson Wagner fired a final round 67 to finish at 13 under par and win by two. It's his third career PGA Tour victory. Stash prominent, hat off. A big hug. Great moment. Yeah, that trophy. I think it's one of the more underrated trophies in the game, Amy.
It really is.
You got the... We got a lay around the neck as well. How about the stats to see how he went about his business?
Check out those bottom two. Strokes gained approach, strokes gained putting. That's a pretty good combination of travel as well.
You've talked about that, the importance of putting. I mean, every week it's important, but especially at Waialae, you know, third in strokes gained putting. Also hit his irons very well. So we thought it'd be cool before his Golf Central pregame duties to have a past champ chat with the three-time PGA Tour winner. Welcome.
Happy to be here with you guys. I feel a little overdressed.
Well, that's okay. You've got a serious show coming up.
But you've got some explaining to do here. You Instagrammed something yesterday that really caught the attention of everyone in this building, which was your pass, your employee pass to get in. Montford.
Yes.
You've lost your Johnson here somehow. I'm curious, are you descended from British royalty? Are you the original Golf's Monty?
No. Where does it come from? I'm named after my grandfather, who was Montford Johnson, and there's been plenty of Montfords in our family. But it is an English name, and honored to share the title with my grandfather, Montford Johnson. My parents decided to call me Johnson at a young age, never looked back. I've got an uncle that's Montford Johnson. He goes by Monty, and a cousin that's Montford. He goes by Monty as well.
Your birth certificate is Montford?
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, a lot of friends that know that on tour, they want me to get a staff bag with Montford Wagner on it.
You should do it. All right, let's take you back to 2012. Do you remember, first of all, who you beat? You beat four players by two shots. Can you name those four?
I played with Charles Howell. Okay. We were in the second to last group.
Yep.
I know Matt Every was in the group behind. I think Carl Peterson and Harrison Fraser.
Fraser and Sean O'Hare was the one who finished. Okay. What do you remember about that week specifically, how you played? Because when you were in contention, you often won. You have one of the strangest stats. You made 186 cuts. You missed 174 cuts. But when you were in contention, you often ended up doing this.
I worked hard that offseason, got a new trainer in November, and I was in the gym like I've never been before. I hate the gym. I'm actually just going back to see him now, hopefully rekindle some of these. But I worked hard all November, December on my body. I was in the at Kapalua Tournament of Champions the week before off of Mayakoba win in 11. I'd been down to see my coach, Bobby Hines, many times that winter down in Florida, and I just knew I was going to win one of those two events. Started on the back nine on Thursday, was 5 under through the first nine holes, and I was walking down that first fairway accepting my speech. Golf suddenly pumped the brakes for me. I think I shot 2 or 3 over on that front nine to shoot 2 under that first day, but it really refocused my goals for that week. I knew I was playing great golf, and it's the most confident I've ever been. Finished 9th at Kapalua, first there, and then almost won at the Amex the next week. Finished 2nd to Mark Wilson. So it was the best 3-week stretch of golf I've ever had.
In the final round here in 2012, Johnson, 6 guys either held or had the solo lead during that final round. You got a hold of it on the 10th hole with a birdie. Didn't lose it after that. What were the nerves like? You were a proven winner at that point, but what were the nerves like over those last 8 holes in that kind of a shootout?
It was really windy that day. I remember hitting great tee shots on 14 and 15, which are dogleg, must-hit fairways, especially for someone with my short length off the tee. Hit fairways there, birdied 15, and I was on cruise control. Good drive off of 16. 17, the pin was back left. The green's been redone since then, but it's still a Redan hole. Cannot miss it right, cannot miss it left. I had a 2-shot lead, and I hit the best 7-iron of my life into the 17th green. Kind of played 18 conservatively. That putt, I almost yipped it in. But Charles Howe had like 5 feet. I thought he was going to putt first, give me the glory. I left about a 6-footer this far short and managed to lip it in. But it was great day. I remember everything about that day.
You played a lot of golf in the Northeast growing up. It's some of the best golf courses on the planet. How did that kind of inform your style of golf as a professional as you set out on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, we moved up to New York my freshman year of high school, and the Metropolitan Golf Association up here, they play their championships, even the boys and junior stuff, on very good golf courses. After the junior year of college, I won the Met Amateur at Hudson National, and then the Met Open at Bethpage. Mm. And then the next year, I won the Ike at Montclair, which has hosted U.S. Open, the Met Am at Piping Rock, which is where I fell in love with C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner, who's big influences there in Hawaii, and then at Wingfoot. So I learned how to play these classic sort of major championship golf courses, and I was never a guy that could go 28, 29 under, but that week I think I was 13 under. I don't know if the scores have ever been that bad since, but it was a windy week, and I feel like I play tough good golf. I feel like I played tough golf course as well. Mm.
We've had a lot of chatter today and since last night, basically, when Jordan Spieth talked about taking up the RV life. That's how he's going to live on the road now. We were having this conversation earlier in the office thinking, nobody does that anymore, and your hand popped up. You were an RV veteran for quite some time.
Oh, my gosh. I had some friends on the Korn Ferry Tour when I was coming up, 2002-03, and I would go over to their RV and barbecue. And when my wife decided to get married, I bought a Winnebago, a little 36-foot RV. We traveled in that for 3 years. And then after I kept my card my first time on tour, we upgraded to a big boy, a Newmar Mountaineer. And this thing was beautiful.
TVs?
Oh, TVs. In-motion satellite. I'm watching ESPN as I'm driving down the road. You can go to the bathroom while driving. And we loved it. We traveled that way all the way through 2011 and traveled with our dog and our son. And then when our daughter, Marianne, was born in 2011, she traveled 1 week. It was a hard week. It was at the Travelers Championship. Nobody slept that entire week. I think she actually called her mom Friday. I'm in the lead. Called her mom Friday and said, "Mom, I gotta get out of here. This is not happening." So she drove down to Virginia with her mom, and I ended up not playing well that weekend because I didn't have my family with me. But that was the last week we spent in it.
Speaking of, you know, the bathroom facilities in these RVs, I believe that's how you actually first met John Daly.
It was my rookie year. 07, we're at Pebble, real tight spot there at the fairgrounds where we parked in Monterey. And I walk outside, I've got to hook up my sewage hose, and it's old and it's been used. So I'm going to leave it at that. It was an old sewage hose. And I'm struggling to get this thing onto the tube. And John Daly walks out, cig in hand, and he's like, "You need some help with that?" And I was like, "Oh, Mr. Daly, I'd love some help." And he comes out barehanded. I'm wearing rubber gloves because I don't want to touch what's in there. He barehands this tube, pulls it up over the thing, fixes my sewage hose for me. And I was like, I feel like such a wuss right now. Look at you barehanding this thing, and I'm in gloves. He says, "Oh, no, man, you look like a doctor with those things." But he invited me up to his RV after that, and that was kind of my first experience with him, and got to know him a little better through RV life. And, man, my wife and I talk a lot about Champions Tour, if I'm lucky enough to play out there, maybe getting another one, and kids will be in college and gone, and kind of relive our glory years.
John Daly will be waiting for you on PGA Tour Champions to relive some of the glory days. Welcome back to Golf Today. In 2014, the Masters Tournament, the RNA, and the USGA announced the creation of the Latin America Amateur Championship in an effort to further develop amateur golf throughout South America, Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean. This week, the championship is in Grand Reserve Golf Club in Puerto Rico.
And here's a look at what the winner of the Latin American Amateur Championship will receive, Damon. An invitation to the Masters, into the U.S. Open, which was announced this week, an exemption into the 2023 Open Championship at Hoylake, and exemptions into the 2023 U.S. Amateur and the Amateur in the U.K. And for a little more, let's go out to Rich Lerner in Puerto Rico with a special guest.
Great to be alongside John Bodenhammer. He's the Chief Championships Officer for the United States Golf Association. John, thanks for being with us. And a big announcement this week that the USGA for the first time has extended an exemption into the U.S. Open to be played at L.A. Country Club North in June to the winner of this championship. Why did the USGA decide to go down that road?
Really important for us, Rich. You know, it really comes down to one word: inspiration. We think all of our championships, they're there to inspire the game in whatever demographic they are. And, you know, for the Latin America Amateur, we looked at this exemption for a number of years. We really look at field strength, not only for this championship, but all of ours before we award exemptions. And boy, the improvement, we've seen it across a number of measures, not just in this, the field improving in this championship and awarding this exemption, but for all of our championships across the 15 that we conduct, the level of play in Latin America has gotten better. This championship's a big part of it, but seeing that across the spectrum really just convinced us that it was time to do that for the U.S. Open.
USGA came to Puerto Rico a year ago, first ever USGA championship to be played here on the island. I think part of the bigger picture of what a good and exciting year 2022 was for the USGA. What do you recall about that championship, the women's amateur four ball, and what else made 2022 so good from the USGA's perspective?
Well, 2022 was a wonderful year for which we were really grateful because we were back to normal for the most part. You know, maybe we'll never get past COVID, but it sure felt like it last year. And you know, in some really meaningful ways on at all of our championships. And I think it was a year of first for us. It was a big year in that regard because we were, this was the first championship we'd ever conducted in Puerto Rico, and working with the Puerto Rico Golf Association was super important. They're an important ally. They're part of what we do with the game. They're one of our allied golf associations. And so to be here and really create a stronger relationship with them was important, and the U.S. Women's Amateur Four Ball did that. We also were in the great state of Alaska for the first time. That was the 50th state in which we've conducted a USGA National Championship, important milestone for us. Yes, Alaska and Puerto Rico are part of what the USGA does, and they feel that for the first time because of what we did last year. And then I think the greatest week of joy I've ever experienced at a competition was in the middle of July at Pinehurst number 6 in the U.S. Adaptive Open, our first and inaugural one. To really embrace a community that just wants to be golfers. They're just folks who want to play golf and play at the competitive level, at the highest level. They finally have a national championship, and we were already seeing how that's inspiring other competitions.
All part of legacy wherever you go. Back to this championship. How do you define legacy? What does that mean, and in what ways do we see that at work?
I think there are a couple of really meaningful ways we think a lot about, not just at the USGA, but our partners at the Masters and the RNA. First is partnership. You know, there really is a unique partnership that the three of us really have the opportunity to work together, learn from one another, but even create friendships there that we can't otherwise at other times of the year, quite like we can here. And it really sends a positive message to the entire golf world that we're cooperating in that manner. So that's number one. Number two, look, let's face it, it's part of why we extended this exemption for the U.S. Open. We'd love nothing more than to see the winner of the Latin America Amateur Championship win the U.S. Open one year. Wouldn't that be a great coming around, like Matthew Fitzpatrick winning the U.S. Amateur and then winning the U.S. Open at the same venue at the Country Club? That's magnificent. That's the ultimate player journey, and we think a lot about that. Finally, at the USGA, I think we do. Our staff comes to this event, and we're inspired by this event because of what we can leave behind. We work with the national federations here closer on things like golf course setup and the agronomic preparation of the golf course, the scoring component. You know, when we were at Casa de Campo a few years ago, we involved a local school that included many orphans, brought them out to be walking scores for this championship, and exposed them to the game of golf for the first time. If you don't get excited about that as a USGA staff member or volunteer, I don't know what's going to get you excited.
It's a great year ahead, too, 2023. I'm going to be in California for U.S. Women's Open and the U.S. Men's Open, a couple of prime time U.S. Opens back in the East. But first time ever for the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, isn't that magnificent? You know, you think about all the great history that's happened at Pebble Beach for the men. You know, going back to the very first USGA or U.S. Open at a public golf course at Pebble Beach when Jack Nicklaus won and hit that one iron in 1972. And then you spin the clock forward with Tom Watson's chip in 82 and Tom Kite's in 92 and, you know, Tiger in 2000 and, you know, Graham and then Gary. Now the women are going to make their own history. And Pebble just breeds history. There's just all kinds of opportunities. It's going to be great.
By the way, John mentioned Alaska. This is a two-time Alaska Open champion. This guy back in the day had some game.
Many moons ago, and back in the day is a key phrase, but competition is very important to me, and it's what gets me up every day, and we're proud to do it at the USGA.
Continue to do a great job at the USGA. Thank you, John.
Thanks for having me, Rich.